The Audible of the best in Bitcoin. This is the Cryptoconomy. What is up, fellow Bitcoiners? Welcome back to the Cryptoconomy. I am Guy Swan, and we are going to jump right into our read today. This one is another one by Roy Scheinfeld, the guy who runs the Breeze wallet and Breeze technology. This one is just about something that's new to the Breeze wallet now. And also just one of the many technologies about Lightning that I think lead to really fun discussions. And it's important to understand how they work to kind of get an idea of the implications and future of the Lightning network. It is titled, Reverse Submarine Swaps, Another Step Towards a Peer-to-Peer Lightning Economy. In any evolutionary process, members of each new generation keep some of their ancestors' traits and gain some new, hopefully improved, ones. When looking at the system of fiat money, there are some traits we'd like to keep while surpassing the rest. For example, fiat is universally acceptable. It's the medium of exchange. The UX is also hard to beat. It's what users are accustomed to and expect. We'd like to preserve both of those traits in the Lightning economy, but there are also several features of the fiat system we're actively working to surpass, in particular, its centralization and its reliance on trust. Decentralization. The fiat system is roughly hierarchical. The mints, central banks, and regulators are at the top. They issue the currency, set the terms of its use, and define who can participate in the system and how. Then come the systemically relevant, i.e. too big to fail, financial institutions, including banks, credit card companies and such, which distribute and circulate the fiat. Those at the top of the hierarchy like this centralized structure because big isomorphic entities are easier to control than a rich ecosystem of smaller scale innovators. The problem with this system is its abundance of choke points. Choke points are a problem, first of all, because they make the system more vulnerable. The more centralized a network is, the more it relies on a few key nodes or edges, which are simultaneously the natural targets for an attack and sources of internal instability. Second, choke points foster censorship in centralized systems. Censorship doesn't have to mean some Orwellian scheme in a surveillance state, though it can. It can simply mean any third-party interference between peers on the network. Those at the top of the fiat hierarchy can't do much about billions of people worldwide exchanging Bitcoin on a peer-to-peer basis. But impeding mass adoption by squeezing a few regional operators is both viable and potentially profitable. LSPs, or Lightning Service Providers, done right, solve both problems. As a network of dozens, hundreds, thousands of LSPs, Lightning will be robust. No single LSP will be able to decide the fate of the whole. And from the perspective of potential censors or regulators, the network will appear more like a reality to be reckoned with than a cow to be pinned and milked. If there's an LSP in every neighborhood, it would be like regulating cats. The more LSPs we have, the more our decentralized network will look and work like a distributed one. And the more Bitcoin, Lightning, and each individual user will be able to resist censorship. How much trust do we want? Trust sounds like a good thing, and it often is. It's a sign of things like love, reliability, honesty, and integrity. Because it's so precious, trust should be handled carefully. The more a relationship relies on trust, the stronger the bond will be, and the greater the risk of those involved getting hurt one way or the other. Indeed, regulators agree. That's why special regulations apply to the institutions users have to trust when dealing with fiat, like banks, investment firms, insurance brokers, and so on. Whoever is entrusted with users' money is liable for it, as they should be. Users have entrusted it to them. So there are two reasons for us to avoid relying on users' trust. One, we don't want to be in a position to lose users' money and violate that trust. Two, we don't want regulators getting any more involved in Bitcoin than necessary. They bring higher costs, slower operation, more choke points, and more centralization. In other words, less Bitcoin. If you ask me how much trust is right for the Bitcoin economy, the answer will always be less. That's why we've always used submarine swaps to help users top up their Breeze balances from their on-chain wallets. Submarine swaps use HTLCs like any other Lightning transaction, so they're just as trustless as any peer-to-peer Lightning transfer. No violation, no regulation. Until recently, however, trust has been required for transactions in the other direction. To move funds from their Breeze balances to an on-chain wallet, users have had to send us the funds and the address of the on-chain destination, and we transferred the funds for them, eating the fees for the on-chain transaction. Users had to trust us to broadcast an on-chain transaction. It only lasted a moment, but still, we had access to the user's funds, and we could have potentially violated their trust. That's why we've changed how transactions work between Breeze and on-chain addresses. Now, they use HTL-based reverse submarine swaps with the same privacy and autonomy users deserve and expect. The nuts and bolts of reverse submarine swaps. To provide this service, we've joined forces with Bolts, an awesome non-custodial exchange run by like-minded crypto developers. Together, we're developing a reverse submarine swap service that works seamlessly with all of Breeze's other great functions. And since no introduction of a new Lightning function would be complete without Alice, it's time for her big entrance, with Breeze playing the role of Bob and Bolts standing in for Carol. 1. Alice opens her Breeze client and wants to send her funds to an on-chain address. She enters the desired amount and the destination address. Behind the scenes, her client also creates a pre-image and sends its hash to Bolts. 2. Bolts creates a HODL invoice using the pre-image hash and returns it to Alice. 3. Alice pays the HODL invoice in Breeze. Yes, Breeze now has seamless support for HODL invoices. This transaction is held by Bolts without being settled yet because Alice's pre-image is required for settlement. 4. Bolts broadcasts an on-chain transaction using a script that requires Alice to reveal her pre-image in order to claim the funds. 5. After the lock transaction is confirmed, Breeze prompts Alice to open the app and claim her funds. Another on-chain transaction is broadcast by Breeze to claim the funds and send them to the on-chain address Alice had previously specified. At this point, Alice must reveal her pre-image to Bolts, since it's a part of the broadcasted transaction. And 6. Bolts uses the revealed pre-image to settle the Lightning payment they've received from Alice. Alice's funds are transferred, but she never loses custody, and she never has to rely on trust. The advantage of integrating Bolt's service is that they're non-custodial like us, which also means that they too evade much of the custody regulation spiral. And since Bolts is open source just like Breeze, users don't need to trust the code. They can audit it. In the old trust-based withdrawal procedure, Breeze carried the cost, because charging people for their trust is a path to super villainy. Bolts provides a valuable service that carries a fee, part of which is just the regular mining fee to process an on-chain transaction, the lock transaction fee, and another part, 0.5%, goes to Bolts for committing capital and operating Lightning nodes. How does it look in practice? Simple, elegant, functional, seamless, like everything in Breeze. For all the improvements to its architecture, there is one thing Lightning seriously needs: transactions. After all, we're not building a model network for Bitcoin payments. Lightning is the real thing. Increasing the transaction flow will induce a chain reaction of other benefits, like more routing possibilities and more liquidity. For that to happen, the chain to Lightning submarine swaps will remain the core function. To get on board, users need to spend off-chain. Fostering LSPs and implementing reverse submarine swaps is hard, but rewarding work. We do these things because we believe people are stronger when they're autonomous, and networks are stronger when they grow from the bottom up. We've seen what happens in a centralized system based on trust. Institutions that are too big to care, propping up other institutions that are too big to fail. We've learned from our ancestors. All right, and that was Reverse Submarine Swaps, Another Step Towards a Peer-to-Peer Lightning Economy by Roy Scheinfeld from the Breeze technology and the Breeze wallet, or Breeze Lightning Service. And I want to dig a little bit, and I'm sure it was really hard to follow the step-by-step when you're not looking at it. Audio makes that much more difficult. So I'm going to go through really how a submarine swap and reverse submarine swap in this instance works to kind of get your head around it and help explain it a little bit better. And then I kind of want to talk about a little bit of how this will alter the nature of trust. And a little bit before I get into a guy's take episode, which I might do maybe this week or next week, about trust in a very broad sense and kind of what I think really the information age is doing to trust. But I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I will give like a little bit of an introduction of kind of my thoughts on that and the future of the Lightning Network. So let's go ahead and hit our sponsor, and then we'll get some guy's take on this read. All right, so before we go over submarine swaps and reverse submarine swaps and HTLCs and HODL invoices, all that good shit, I just want to go ahead and say, if you guys have not played around with Lightning yet, if you haven't used the Breeze wallet, I highly recommend it. Particularly if you're excited about any of this technology, go use it. And it's still in beta, so, you know, it will still have problems, and every once in a while, in fact, more often recently, if I go like a month or month and a half, and then suddenly there's like a little bit hiccup, it's usually like something kind of ran into itself during the most recent update, and then I just update again, and it's fixed. But I have submitted like one or two bug reports for things that seem to persist for a little while, but outside of that, the thing has just worked for me. But if you're excited about this stuff, like just playing with it is so much fun to me. I like particularly if I'm like trying to learn something or I want to kind of understand what's going on, I feel like getting my hands on the actual software, the actual app or whatever, and you know, installing it on the computer and tinkering or looking at the advanced settings, like all that stuff. I don't know how you would learn it otherwise. Like, it's like there's something to the actual doing of a thing, you know? Like, I can always read the manual or read an explanation of something, but it's a whole different story when I get to see it work, when I get to look under the hood a little bit and kind of see the pieces, the building blocks that put the thing together, and get to see in action what I heard explained or what I read and saw in some other article that was breaking it down or in the docs or something like that. So anyway, I just wanted to say, if you guys haven't played around with that yet, do so. And it doesn't take long at all. The initial sync, which is just the opening submarine swap, essentially, it's just waiting for the first transaction, is really the only wait in the whole app. And that's what's really cool about it. In fact, JC, another friend of ours from the Raleigh Bitcoin Meetup, and myself have made a video, and I'm just now getting into actually starting the project. I put it off for a long time, but I'm just procrastinating with other projects. What was I going to say? Oh yeah, in the video though, we spent a whole day running around using Bitcoin and Lightning, basically. In fact, I think we essentially used Breeze Wallet and Lightning all day. I think that's all we really did. And then spent using like 90% fold. I think we used bit refill for like one thing. Can't remember exactly. I'll have the video out at some point. So keep an ear out for that. But yeah, it was shockingly easy. And we actually onboarded a guy, like an employee that worked at Best Buy while we were doing the video, and got him to download the Breeze wallet. And they waited for the first, you know, 5 minutes or 7 minutes, whatever it was, to do a transaction while we were like walking around the store. And then we went back and then sent him some Bitcoin over Breeze, and it worked, you know? So anyway, that's my ploy to get you guys to actually play around with it if you haven't. It's really easy. Go to Test Flight or download Test Flight and go to, I think it's breeze.technology, B-R-E-E-Z, no third E, breeze.technology. And like, that's it. Let me confirm that actually, so that I'm not sending you guys to like a phishing website or something. Brex. Nope, not that one. Okay, yeah, that's the correct website. But you go up there and sign up to, or maybe you can actually just get it on Test Flight or the Google test version of Test Flight. I can't remember what the Google equivalent is. But anyway, it's not hard to get. You can start at breeze.technology and that'll get you there. All right, so let's dig into submarine swaps a little bit here. So the submarine swap idea is actually really simple. I kind of feel like all the explanations of it go a little bit too much into detail. First off, one thing that I think throws a lot of people is saying something is a pre-image, because that's the technical term, like that's the correct term. But a pre-image is literally just a one-time used, well, not necessarily one-time used, but typically it's one-time use, a secret. It's like your password for a very explicit transaction. So when somebody says pre-image, literally all it means is that it's just a secret. You're locking a hash, like the pre-image to the hash is the original secret that you're using to lock up these funds with, and then you lock it with the hash, and only the pre-image, the secret that went into making the hash, can then unlock it. So you wouldn't always call it a secret because it's not necessarily so, but in the context that it's used for hash time lock contracts, it is the key that is used on the lock. But the overall idea of a submarine swap is very simple. Is I have my little secret, I have my key, and I send a transaction and pay it in full to the person who is going to do the on-chain transaction with it, and I lock it with that secret so that they cannot yet unlock it, but I give them the lock. So my transaction has a lock on it, and then they send an on-chain transaction of the same amount or the agreed exchange amount with the same lock, and the only way that I can get the on-chain one is to expose my key. I have to show them my key and unlock it. And then when that happens, they see the key, they take the key, and they unlock my transaction. So that's it. They have locked a transaction over on the left side. I have locked a transaction over on the right side. And the only way for me to get the one from my left is to show them the key that allows them to unlock the one on the right. And in doing so, you've created a situation where nobody ever has custodial control. Like the actual receiving of the funds is dependent upon the sending of the funds and vice versa. One can't happen without the other. So there is no custodial relationship. And that's an amazing thing that we actually have a tool that does this. That's one of the beauties of Bitcoin as a programmable money. And Lightning Network as a programmable payments layer on top of it is all of these amazing things that we can actually do with it by combining relatively simple tools. And obviously, that works pretty much the same in both directions. Either it's you do that on-chain to a Lightning lock to get funds from Bitcoin to Lightning, or you do it off-chain on Lightning with an on-chain swap from Lightning back to Bitcoin. And that's basically what this is that they're now doing the reverse. They've got that sorted out and partnered with Bolt, which is actually an exchange I did not know about. You can do Lightning, Bitcoin, and Bitcoin, and then also Litecoin and Lightning Litecoin. So they do swaps for Bitcoin and Litecoin on-chain and off-chain. I don't know why you would want to use Litecoin, but sure. Maybe there are some of you out there. Now, the HODL invoice that they do is really kind of the same thing I just described. Is just, it's an invoice that you go ahead and pay, but can't actually be redeemed by the receiver until you reveal the secret. And that can be done in a number of different instances and like a number of different ways. Like, you could use it maybe to essentially, quote unquote, pay for a product on like Amazon, but then only release the money when it arrives at your doorstep. Or there was actually a really interesting example. I think it was actually in the HODL HTLC like paper, like the document or whatever. But it was a really clever idea that's kind of stuck with me. Was the idea of like an anti-spam adversarial situation, like relying on the Lightning Network or utilizing the Lightning Network in an almost in the old sense of proof of work, where you would just use proof of work to like do a little hash or make sure that a machine couldn't just log in a billion times like in a second. But basically, like, I could do a HODL HTLC for like $1 to a website, or maybe 10 cent, who knows, whatever. $1 to a website, and go around and like look at their videos and their YouTubes and their tutorials and whatever it is that they do on this website that they want to leave only for legitimate users. And then if I do anything wrong, like if I attack their network, if I try to log in 50 times in under a second, if I try to download all their videos all at once from their entire library, et cetera, if I do something that is clearly outside of the terms of agreement between me and the website, well, then they can yank that HODL HTLC. They can take that $1 from me, and now I've basically paid for being an ass. Whereas if everything goes right, I just leave the website a little bit later, and they return the HODL HTLC. So it's like it's a deposit. It's a security deposit on interacting online. And that's a really powerful idea that is not possible with any other system. Maybe it ends up being nothing. You know, maybe Lightning itself from an individual perspective is never so ubiquitous. Maybe it ends up being largely a business and payments infrastructure that's between companies. That's very, very possible, and I see that as, without a doubt, being something that could be a potential future of Lightning. It's an incredibly powerful tool, and it could end up being that channels are less of a users for payments situation and more of a business agreement set up for moving and settling enormous amounts of wealth between Company A and Company B. We don't really know what the main use case for this thing is going to be. We just know it's got a lot of potential. But therein lies the reason why mitigating trust is so important. And I want to talk about trust a little bit before we close this episode out. Like I said, I don't want to go too much into it because I want a guy's take all about this. But going back to an idea that I bring up a lot recently, that we're living in the age of disillusionment, that the payoff and the ability for centralized institutions to control a narrative, to control a population, for us to group into these very large, very basic narratives is kind of breaking apart. We are now being bombarded with so many narratives. I don't think it's out of the question at all to say that almost everybody who's listening to this can identify that we have lost trust in our major institutions, that it is incredibly difficult to believe, to know what the truth is, that there is so much fake information coming at us from all angles, that there is so much, there's so much revealed as being bullshit from information that we once trusted. All of the major threads, the hierarchy of media that we used to rely on, the narratives that we used to think of as the unbreakable totems of our society have all broken. And I don't think this is a bad thing. I think this is a necessary transition to the new state of the world and information. In fact, I call it specifically the Great Disillusionment because I think what we had before was the illusion of truth. But what we were believing was wrong. It simply was difficult to find. It was difficult enough to get competing information, to get an alternative or a variation on the narrative, that we just believed it by default, because so did everyone around us. So what will happen in the future? How must we adapt to account for this new reality, for this new flood of information? A couple of things, and people adapt amazingly well. So I can't see why we would not adapt to this new environment as we have to all environments, no matter how messy or long the process may be. But one, filtering. We need to figure out how to filter the massive flood of information that's coming to us. Two, deductive reasoning. Like, what sort of totems, what sort of fundamental truths can we rely on to assess certain information? And three, trust. This is something that I think is, in fact, Jill Carlson had a really great speech about this that kind of hit on this same idea. We have this idea that everything should be trustless, and that Bitcoin should be trustless, and all the services and exchanges around Bitcoin should be trustless, and all the Lightning nodes should be trustless, all the companies should be trustless, et cetera, et cetera. You know. And I think that's kind of a rejection of reality, maybe. But I actually think the opposite is going to happen. Because it's so much more difficult to figure out what the truth is, and we're going to have to rely on each other more and more to assess the information. And that's one of those things that specialization that the market does. It makes us more and more interdependent on each other. Like, I don't know how to make a TV, but I have a TV. Why? Because I trust someone else to make it for me. I don't know how to grow or cultivate most of the food that I eat. In fact, the couple of times I've tried it, I kind of sucked at it, and I didn't keep up with it very well. So, another great example. I am dependent on someone else in the economy. But I particularly work very hard to be good at judging which person to trust for that job. I think the new information reality is going to have to adapt in that same way. I think we will be more interdependent on each other, and we will still have to learn a lot, and very importantly, we will have to learn to be good shoppers. We will have to learn how to assess whether or not something A is more valuable than B, or A is more accurate than B, but then we will rely on trust far more than we have in the past. I think we will split apart into smaller and smaller communities, smaller and smaller networks around those people that we know we can trust. And that doesn't mean that we know who they are. That doesn't mean that we trust them based on an authority. We trust them based on reputation. We trust them based on their history. And we know we know who they are because we have cryptographic identities, that whether it be a PGP key, like public key sort of situation, like on Lightning Network, that we can prove who we are as our reputation, and that will become an incredibly valuable resource. In fact, the more we are able to define that, which I think is going to be a huge part of establishing new markets in a global economy that has no jurisdictions, that has no authoritative hierarchy, reputation and trust are going to be the critical things that need to be innovated on. Is how do we allow more trust? How do we create situations like submarine swaps so that certain institutions we don't have to trust? We at least know that in every way possible, we can mitigate all of the major issues involved. And Breeze Wallet has the idea. Like I feel like I can trust the Breeze company because I know they are out to prove that I don't need to trust them. That They are going to use submarine swaps. They're going to allow me to hold my keys. I can pick them as an LSP, and the app does that by default, but I can pick any other LSP I want. I can open up my own channels. And that's the sort of thinking that I think will be, that's the sort of mentality that I think is going to be incredibly valuable going forward. And I hope to see more companies like do this. And I do, I see a lot of them that, luckily, this is very prevalent in the Bitcoin space, and I think it's one of the few communities that really has not lost the adversarial thinking. And I feel like the market has done, or at least the companies that I follow and really try to stay up on, have done an amazing job of seeing that this is a long-term goal, that we need to build good reputations. We need to have really good long-term relationships with customers and give them every possible way to maintain their sovereignty as easily as possible. And when you really break into Lightning and look at all of its potential, there is so much there to do things like that. And I can't wait until more and more of these technologies start working together, because that's where the power will be, when your Lightning node can do submarine swaps, like loop in and loop out. It can do AMPs. It can do HODL HTLCs. It can do circular payments. It can be funded with a coin join and exited or withdrawn with a coin join. You can splice. You can aggregate. You can do all of the great that, like, as we start seeing all of these things come into one, we will have an incredibly powerful tool on our hands, one that's already amazing. So, again, if you haven't yet, I would highly recommend checking out Breeze. It's super fun to get your hands on Lightning, and I'm constantly surprised by how many people seem excited about it but haven't played with it yet. And also, just a footnote here, because I've been talking up Breeze this whole freaking episode. They did not sponsor the show or anything. Like, this is not an ad. I just really like the wallet. So, recommending it to you guys. With that, thank you so much for listening to the show. I think that's all I wanted to get into. I will be having a guy's take as I really flesh out my thoughts on the whole trust issue and, how I think a lot of those things are going to change in a future that is increasingly digital and increasingly dealing with all of our most important information, dealing with keys to enormous amounts of Bitcoin and navigating and exchanging trillions of dollars on a regular basis, which I don't think is very far away in our future. So it's our duty to stay informed, to learn, to play, to test, review, and, you know, give feedback on these things. So I encourage you to do so if you haven't had an opportunity. Thank you guys so much for listening. I am out. Don't forget to check out or follow Roy Scheinfeld. And of course, I will have the link so you can drop that. I think it was a Medium article, was it? I wasn't even paying attention. Yeah, I think it was. So drop some claps on this one. I'll be sure to go back and actually do that. If you want to support this show, don't forget to share it out with everybody you know. And of course, you can become a patron at patreon.com/thecryptoeconomy. That'll get you in the Cryptoeconomy Crew Telegram chat. But you can also do it with tippin.me. And you can use the BTC Pay pay button. I finally got BTC Pay server working, and that is on the website at thecryptoeconomy.com, where you can explore the entire library of the Bitcoin Audible project here. So check that out at thecryptoeconomy.com. And if you can donate or want to join the Cryptoeconomy Crew, our Telegram chat, we'd love to have you. Just shoot me a DM and let me know. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you all tomorrow. Until then, take it easy.